listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net. Oh, my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
I'm going to coo-coo-coo over Lukaku today here on World Football Daily as the Belgian striker bags two and Everton sweep past Newcastle United on Monday Night Football. It's the Champions League tonight, though. Milan face a tough test as they head to Amsterdam to take on the mighty, great Ajax. But all eyes will surely be on London as Rafa Benitez returns to the Emirates, this time for competitive football as manager of Napoli. They take on Arsene Wenger's storming Arsenal side that continue to rock the Premier League, but can they do it in Europe? Welcome to Tuesday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Deuce Wilson, bringing you, of course, the news and all those important views from around the world of football. It's a thunderous night tonight. It was a big night last night, of course. Newcastle, getting them those two confused, and that should never happen. Newcastle getting thumped in a first half stomping from Roberto Martinez's Everton side that just seemed to have got all things right at the moment. I'm no doubt going to be crying about one of my favourite players in the Premier League, of course, Romelu Lukaku, who bagged two last night, showing grace, poise, and of course power as well, as he helped to move Everton past Pardew's side that are struggling. But tonight it's all about the Champions League football, and we have two cracking guests to talk about that with us today. First up is a man who joins us from Basel, of all places. Yes, he's covering them against Schalke tonight, but it's a little out of his comfort zone because he's a man who normally knows all things about French football, and that's where we're going with him today. He is, of course, freelance football commentator, the one, the only, Mr. Ian Holyman, joining us here on the show today. Ian, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, mate. It's been far too long since we had you on World Football Daily. How are you doing?
It has been quite a while. Yes, it has. I'm very good, thanks.
There's been plenty of change in French football since we last had you on. What have you made, and have you been slightly taken aback about how well Monaco have started to this top flight season? You can talk about the money and the players they've brought in, but it takes a long time, a lot of the time, to get these sorts of sides with lots of money to gel, and it's happened very quickly.
I think that's absolutely the fundamental point, and it's something that's surprised a number of people. I think even Mathieu Valbuena, it was the Marseille midfielder, came out and said, you know, after Monaco had beaten Marseille and come from behind to beat Marseille in Marseille earlier in the season, he was surprised by how well how much of a cohesive unit that Claudio Ranieri's managed to put together already. And I think in the games that I've seen them, that's certainly something that has come to the fore. But I mean, as you say, there's a lot of money being spent, but it's not just about spending the money; it's about spending the money wisely. And if you look at the players that they've bought, I mean, everybody talks about Falcao and his goals, but I think what really shines through is his work rate. You know, he's really committed to the team. This is not a star in the prima donna kind of sense. This is a star very much because of his prolific goal-scoring ability. But the guy really rolls up his sleeves and gets stuck in for the team. I think that's an attitude that you've seen as well from João Moutinho, who was injured earlier in the season. You've got Jeremy Toulalon, who's coming back into France with really something to prove, try and get himself back into the national side. But there's never been a question really about his attitude, despite his involvement in that rather infamous strike in South Africa a couple of years ago. And then you've got Ricardo Carvalho and Eric Abidal at the back. I mean, you know, could you ask for two better leaders in a side? I think Monaco have done exceptionally well in the transfer market, very wisely brought in players like that. And Ranieri is, because of players like that and their experience, he's been able to blood some very promising youngsters in his side as well. It's a very, very promising and an excellent mix.
What about Ranieri and his experience with Chelsea, being at a club with so much money, and it didn't work too well for him and ended up losing him his job, of course. Do you think he's learned from that, and that's influenced the purchases that he's made in this Monaco side and influenced the way he's got this group to gel as well?
I'm not sure how much of an influence the Chelsea situation had on him. Of course, he's got huge amounts of experience in Serie A as well. I mean, and in Spain. I mean, people make a lot of the fact that he's never won a title, but he's come very close on a number of occasions. I think the important thing with Monaco is that he joined the club. He didn't just join them this summer. You know, he joined them when they were in the second division. So he's had a chance to get to know the players, even though he hasn't kept a lot of the players who got promotion. He's kept some of them, and he's certainly been given the opportunity to have a good look at the youngsters who he's been able to bring into the side this season, or been able to use, rather, I should say, in the side this season. So I think the real key for Ranieri and the success at Monaco is that he's been able to build the team himself, or, you know, in France, as in many European countries outside of England, it's sporting directors and presidents who very generally decide who is going to be bought. How much input Ranieri's had in that, I'm not quite sure. I would suggest it's been rather significant, but you know, aside from that, I think it's just the time that he's had and the ability to actually shape the team and shape the club and their sort of vision of things that's really been helpful for him.
Just finally in on Monaco before we move away slightly to elsewhere in France, of course. Obviously, Falcao, as you mentioned, the work rate, the 7 goals in the league as well this season, obviously fantastic. But is it pleasing as well to see that he's not the only goal scorer in this side at the moment? He's not being relied on. You've got Ribéry, who's added 6 himself. And it's a side that, do you feel that without Falcao, they could still be in and around that area with PSG?
That would be a huge ask, you have to say. I mean, Falcao, what a quality player. He's proven it at Porto, Atletico Madrid. Now he's proven it again at Monaco. I'm not sure that without Falcao, you're going to see Emmanuel Rivière score so many goals. I mean, there's no doubt that Rivière's got a certain degree of potential. I mean, he's by no means in the Falcao class, but Rivière himself has said many a time already this season that the fact he's playing alongside Falcao just simply gives him more space, because defenders are just drawn to Falcao, and if they're marking Falcao, obviously they can't be marking Rivière at the same time, and that's given him opportunities. There's no doubt that he himself is starting to exploit his talent. He's had a lot of injury problems, notably, which really hampered him at Toulouse, and I think it was probably a good move on his part to drop down to League Two last January and just get a few games under his belt, get a little bit of confidence going. But, I mean, you said that they're not really Falcao dependent. Falcao, 7 goals. Rivière, 6 goals. The only other man who's found the net is Jean Moutinho. So, you know, they are rather over-reliant at the minute on their strikers. But that's the way they play. They like to get down the flanks. The fullbacks get forward as well. You've got Lucas Ocampos, very promising young Argentine attacking midfielder, on one flank. Yannick Ferreira-Carrasco, who's an excellent young Belgian, on the other flank. And they're just slinging crosses towards Falcao and Rivière, and they're really the focal point of the attack. So that perhaps explains why so many goals have been scored by the two strikers. But I mean, certainly if there were to be a relatively middle to long term injury for Falcao, then this is not the same Monaco side.
Elsewhere, further down the table, Ian, you've got Lyon, who have started brightly, of course, and then really struggled in the last maybe 4 or 5 weeks of the season or so. Lyon's always one where we're not really sure how they're going to start a season and how they're going to finish. But have you rated their start so far to this year?
It's extremely up and down, isn't it? I mean, they started, I think, with 4 straight wins and didn't concede a goal. And then came the real slap in the face when they played Real Sociedad in the Champions League playoff. They got beaten 2-0 in both legs of that one. And, I mean, it was a tough draw, even on paper before they started, but they were pretty much outclassed in both legs, and the thing is with Lyon that they're really trying to build in a different way as to what they've done or as to what they did when they won those 7 consecutive League One titles. Pretty much back then, they followed the Bayern Munich model of basically buying up all the best domestic talent in France, the likes of Florent Malouda, Abidal himself, Mikael Essien as well, were all poached from lesser League One clubs. Now, they don't really have the money since they bought Johan Gorkuf in 2010 for some 22 million and decided crazily to pay him something like 6 million a year, which is a huge salary in France. He's the highest paid Frenchman, and that sort of ranks up there with the sort of Paris Saint-Germain squad. They've really had to tighten their belts, and certainly this season, and that's why you saw the problems with Bafétimbi Gomis, who was last season's leading scorer, and Jimmy Brion over the summer, Lyon desperately trying to offload them, and in the end having to settle for selling Lisandro Lopez and the likes of Michel Bastos as well. They're really trying to rely on their youth academy, which has produced some very good players. Of that, there's no doubt. I mean, Karim Benzema, Hatem Ben Arfa, just to name a couple of the recent past. In the present, there's Maxime Gonalon, Clément Grenier as well, who's really coming to the fore. It looks like he's going to be an excellent player for France and for his club, perhaps not always Lyon, in years to come. There are a number of other youngsters coming through, but when you've got that many youngsters in the side and in the squad, you don't have too many experienced heads, such as Steve Malbronk, for example, then you are going to get patches where the form goes right off, the confidence takes a real blow, and it's going to take a little bit for Remy Gard to turn around. I don't see them finishing in the top three this season.
You mentioned, obviously, the youth academy there at Lyon. It has produced a number of quality players. There are academies that get lauded around the world. Porto, for instance, I remember having a chat with somebody this season about how Porto is considered one of the best youth academies in the world, in world football. Obviously, Manchester United are mentioned a lot as well. Where does this Lyon youth academy kind of match up in terms of being kind of a great youth academy for world football in general? And why is it so good at producing talent in France?
That's an excellent question. I mean, if you look at the youth academy set up in France in the sort of 1990s, the first part of the millennium, it was really the envy of the world. I mean, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge just yesterday was on French radio saying that Germany, and we know how much young talent they've got, learned a lot from France. They really copied the style of these youth academies where the kids are—they're not only taught technique, but they still go to school. They're very well sort of surrounded by people who have their best interests at heart. Really trying to develop them as men as well as footballers. I think a number of clubs, for example, Paris Saint-Germain, their youth academy is pretty poor. It's something that the Qatari owners are trying to work on. But you know, if you think about the people who've come through there, just maybe Mamadou Sakho stands out really as the prime example. But there's so few, they don't really focus on that. I mean, they've got the money to be able to afford not to for the moment. Lyon, as I said, have to now get back to the youth academy, having, you know, pretty much ruled the roost for the first decade of the millennium in terms of world football. It's pretty difficult to place them, but certainly in France right now, they're doing things perhaps not quite the best in League One, but they're certainly right up there.
Let's talk about a bit of the Champions League now, Ian. Now, I know you said you're covering Basel against Schalke tonight, but we will sidestep that for the moment and look at the big game for Marseille against Borussia Dortmund. The group of death, this group has been called, obviously, with Arsenal and Napoli as well. How important is it, obviously, with a rough start, but how important is it for Marseille to be bold in these away fixtures? Because it seems like in these groups of death, it's actually getting points on the road that are going to be the vital, vital part of getting through this group.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because Elie Boop, the Marseille coach, said pretty much the same thing yesterday in his pre-match press conference. He said, we're going to go out there, we're going to go at them, and we're going to try and play our football. He said, yes, we are undoubtedly going to have to defend for spells, given the quality that's in that Dortmund side. But let's not forget the last time that Marseille were in the Signal Iduna Park, they won 3-2 to progress to the knockout stages with Arsenal, who were again in the group stage with them. it's true that perhaps Dortmund in the last couple of years have stepped up more than a couple of gears. And of course, with that tremendous home support and the extra Champions League experience that they've garnered in the last couple of seasons, they are a different proposition. But Marseille, I saw them play at the weekend against Lorient. They weren't particularly special. But I think in the likes of André Ayew, Mathieu Valbuena and Dimitri Payet, they've got an excellent attacking trio behind the central striker. Perhaps they're going to be missing André-Pierre Gignac tonight. That's a huge miss. Look out, too, for their new defensive midfielder, Gianelli Imbula, who is absolutely superb. League Two player of the season last year. Bought for Gangon for something like 7.5 million. Few eyebrows raised. He's only in his early 20s, but he is sensational. Excellent player, excellent distribution, reads the game absolutely superbly, and they're going to give Dortmund a real run for their money this evening.
We've mentioned obviously last season the small squad that Marseille had, and really it's not been built on exponentially. You know, it's not still a massive squad reaped with depth, but for the Champions League games, we expect to see Marseille obviously raising their game a lot on these big European nights. Do you think over the long period of the season it is going to have an impact on their league form, and it is going to be very detrimental to them in Ligue 1?
If they manage to get out of the group, yes. But I mean, that is a huge.
I'm being optimistic for them, Ian. Everybody's got a chance, surely.
they certainly do. But I mean, you've got a fancy Arsenal. You've got to fancy Arsenal and Borussia Dortmund from that group to go through to the knockout stages. I don't think Marseille would welcome a Europa League challenge. I think there's no doubt that last season when they got knocked out of the Europa League in the group stages, there weren't too many tears shed at the Stade Velodrome. And I think that it was a major factor in them coming through nicely in the second part of the season to finish second to Paris Saint-Germain, which was really the new Ligue 1 title, if you like, because Paris Saint-Germain, just with the means at their disposal, are just or were last season just too good for everybody else. But yeah, I mean, Marseille, it's a fantastic club. If they do get through, I mean, that group, then okay, I still can't see them going very far, and I think that it's a good point that you make about the strength and depth in their squad, but I don't think it's going to be a problem simply because they're not going to have that problem.
Very quickly, Ian, because we've taken up far too much of your time, but we can't not talk French football without talking PSG at the moment. It is obviously the dominant force in Ligue 1 just about at the moment. They take on Benfica tomorrow night. The toughest game, of course, really, in their group, arguably, aside from maybe travelling to Olympiacos. But will PSG be looking to kind of go through this group in kind of third gear, or will they want to really show everybody that, yeah, okay, we've got an easier group, but we're going to take this as seriously as anybody and make sure there are no slip-ups?
Well, I think last season, if you saw them under Carlo Ancelotti in the Champions League, they were very different to the side that were in League One. And I think we saw that in the first game at Olympiacos. They came through and won 4-1 in the end. Not particularly impressive, but they've been absolutely appalling, quite frankly, in League One so far this season. They've only produced one decent performance of note. That was away at Bordeaux when they won 2-0. But Bordeaux are languishing near the relegation zone. And that, you can't read too much into that. I was unfortunate enough to be at the Parc des Princes on Saturday when they beat Toulouse. Really, it is very, very workmanlike from Paris Saint-Germain right now. It's reminiscent of Carlo Ancelotti at the start of last season. They're winning games, but it's by far from impressive. And the game prior to the Toulouse game was against Valenciennes, who are currently bottom of the table. The PSG were fortunate to come away with a win and would have even been fortunate to come away with a point from that game. So poor was their display. But as I say, I think, and it's been mentioned before by the likes of Javier Pastore, that these sort of players, they find it difficult to get themselves motivated for League One games. The games are simply not big enough for them. That's certainly not the case in the Champions League. So I think that we will see a different face from PSG when they step out against Benfica.
It will be an interesting tie, and everything around PSG is so interesting at the moment. I just can't believe I've heard somebody say I was unfortunate enough to be watching PSG at the Parc des Princes. I never thought I'd hear somebody say that. Ian, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today, mate, and it's always a pleasure to catch up with you on all things French football and your good self in general. Enjoy the football tonight, mate, and we look forward to speaking with you again very soon indeed.
Pleasure.
Cheers, Ian. Thank you. Cheers, Ian. Ian Holyman there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things French football. Now, you may think, because obviously we normally have one guest on the show, that is it. And joining me next will be Mr. Rafa Gonzalez. But no, there is more. Oh, yes, there is more. Of course, what would a week be without a little trip down to the Bundesliga and to talk a little bit of German football? And of course, Dortmund's hopes tonight in the Champions League is a man who we love having on the show. He's our very own German football expert. It's Mr. Kit Holden, everybody. Kit, how are we today, mate? I hear you are actually in the Vaterland itself. How are you doing in Germany? Whereabouts are you?
I am in Berlin at the moment, mate. I'm just coming out of the office. I'm doing a year on a new show to here. So, yeah, authentically in the mix, as it were.
We would expect nothing less from you, my friend. Nothing less at all. Big night for German football. But let's just go back to the weekend first. Bayern Munich against Wolfsburg, a 1-0 victory. This time last year, we would have expected Bayern to storm 90% of the games that we've seen. It's not been the same in the last few weeks. Despite the victories, is there still unrest around the Bayern camp?
There's a lot of unrest. I mean, I don't think it's particularly justified. When Guardiola came in, there were a lot of people who made, quite a lot of big predictions and thought Bayern would be completely unbeatable from the word go, and it clearly wasn't going to be the case. You know, any trainer who comes in that, to that kind of team that's experienced so much and is so set in their ways and then tries to change even the smallest things is obviously going to have problems. And that doesn't necessarily mean he's doing the wrong thing, but it just means they're going to take time to adjust to the system. And the fact that they're taking time isn't a surprise. The fact that they're doing it and winning games, albeit not as convincingly as perhaps we'd expect from the squad, isn't, a tragedy. It's not a crisis for Bayern. Matthias Sammer came out a few weeks ago after the Hannover game and had a right rant about Bayern's attitude and how they were hiding behind Guardiola, and that's caused a hell of a lot of issues around the camp. Lahm's just come out today and criticised Sammer for it after it all died down. So there is a lot of unrest, but I think largely it's unjustified because at the end of the day, there's been some scrappy 1-0s. They haven't been pouring in goals left, right and centre, but they've also beaten Schalke 4-0. They've also beaten Hannover 4-1 in the Cup. They've been convincing in the Champions League game so far. It's not a bad start to the season by any stretch of the imagination.
It's of course exactly like Dortmund, who've had a fantastic start to the season as well. They picked up 5 goals on the weekend, and they're looking very much like a team that's going to be hard to slow down. What's changed from this year compared to last year in the league?
I think generally they've put more focus on the league this year. I think last year they didn't have a very good start, and they had a good start in the Champions League, and then slowly, kind of organically, it developed that the Champions League became a priority as Bayern pulled further and further away. And Bayern have been the first team to drop points this year, and Dortmund have pounced on that, although they've dropped points since. They're kind of bored, I think, by that, and they're keen to reestablish themselves in the league and show Bayern that they're not actually very far behind them at all. I think also, players like Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang coming in and wanting to prove themselves, and they've done that very well, and they've started brilliantly, and that gives the whole team a bit of a lift and a boost. And also, opponents don't know how to play against them, and they're playing against Spitzer or Lewandowski or those guys, however good they are, and they know them inside out, and they've played against them a few times. It's often you can be a bit stale at the start of the season when you're kind of coming back and you haven't played for a few months, but when it's a completely new player, particularly for someone like Aubameyang with all that pace, it's sometimes a bit of a surprise for opponents, and they just got a bit of a sort of confidence boost at the moment. But again, I don't think we should get too carried away. I mean, they're not haven't been super start to the season. It's been a very good start to the season, just like Bayern. And obviously they're scoring more goals and the performances look more convincing. But it's still early days yet, so we'll see.
Oh, Kate, you're not letting yourself get carried away with this then. Oh, you're keeping level-headed, man. That's fair play to you. We've been I've been cooing about Romelu Lukaku in the Premier League for the last few months or so now. I was just wondering, in your opinion, who's that similar in the Bundesliga kind of player that is maybe being unrecognised only until now for their talents at the moment in the Bundesliga?
That's a question to throw in for me. So, I mean, one that springs to mind, not so much in that respect, but certainly in the respect that they're gaining this season and have come up quite surprisingly this season, is Rafinha. Bayern, because obviously he's been on the bench for Bayern for most of his career, part of the first 6 months, and he's been very much a reserve player, a squad player. And Guardiola, having moved Lahm into the defensive field, has put him at right back, and he said himself he's been surprised how good he is. And Rafinha, who many really traditionally is a bit of a journeyman and certainly a squad player for big clubs, has come into his own and had a really, really good start to the season. So, yeah, perhaps not an unsung hero as of yet, because again, it's early days, but certainly someone who's surprised in the first few games.
Another player who's obviously caught the attention of people through his goal-scoring form at the moment has been the early start of Stuttgart's Vedad Ebisevic. Obviously, this is a player who's obviously got goals in him. He's scored 15 goals last season, grabbed a decent amount at Hoffenheim during his time. But this is a pretty exceptional start, even by his standards, 6 goals in the first 7 games.
Sorry, I missed a fair chunk of that. The line was funny.
I was just wondering what you made of Ibisevic's impressive start, 6 goals in the first 7 games. Can it continue?
Yeah, I think he can. I think Stuttgart in general have almost at times needed someone like that to really pull them up, because it hasn't been a good start for them, and there's been a lot of trouble around the club with Labbadia and him leaving and Schneider coming in. And you know, I think a player like that who can be consistent is obviously going to be a massive boost for a club like that. And yeah, I think you know he is obviously a very, very strong player. I think he should have got better than he did Hoffenheim. I can certainly see that going on.
Is Stuttgart a side that can step into, if Schalke continue their poor league form, step into maybe that fourth place role? Because it's quite open for that fourth Champions League spot. I know it's early days, of course, but if Schalke can't recover from this poor start.
So the fourth Champions League spot, I always think, is a lot more open than people give it credit for in Bundesliga. I mean, you know, Schalke didn't walk to it last season. They were within a couple of games of losing out. We're quite lucky that the teams around them perhaps didn't have the maturity to really push through to the end of the season. I think Schalke seems to lack a certain kind of philosophy, a certain unity in the way they go about the season. I don't know if that's the end Taylor's fault or if it's, you know, something more structural or to do with the squad, but certainly there doesn't seem to be a kind of defensive unity that you get the other big clubs, even at Leverkusen, obviously at Bayern Dortmund, and some of the clubs like Mainz and Hannover, that you can sense a real kind of squad mentality, a real kind of togetherness where they drive through, and that's how clubs do well in the Bundesliga, regardless of the quality they have. And Schalke don't tend to have that, and obviously it hasn't helped them. It's had, you know, players coming in and out over the last few years. But I think, yeah, it's certainly going to be an uphill struggle for them. That said, it is, as I say, a very, very open league, and you know, they started season started before and come back up. They started last season with a bang and then plummeted, and have to fight their way back up. So, you know, with Schalke, I don't think you can ever really tell, which is part of the excitement.
What about Schalke's chances against Basel tonight? And what was the reaction from the Schalke camp to the Basel win against Chelsea? Did that give them a big boost after the last round of the Champions League games?
I don't think that result gave a particular boost. I mean, I think they're wary of Basel on the back of that result. Jens Keller was talking this week about how quickly, Barber can change their game, how dangerous they can be and how flexible they are tactically. And I think there's a lot of respect for a team like Basel, so not just against Chelsea, but against United and another big opponent in the big fire in the first leg a couple of years ago as well. Albeit got thrashed in the second leg. But yeah, they've shown their quality, and Schalke have a lot of respect for Basel. But at the same time, I think they see this as a chance to kind of atone for that league form. Because I mean, obviously they're top of the group. They won that first game quite convincingly, and if they can get a good result tonight, it could just give them that kind of psychological boost that will push them through the next two games in the Bundesliga.
Obviously, tomorrow night, Bayern Munich head to Manchester, take on Manchester City. And there's a lot of talk about Guardiola's record against English sides in the Champions League. Will that play on the minds of the players, or just Guardiola, or not at all tomorrow night?
I don't think it'll play on anyone's mind, to be honest. I mean, I think that's quite an English media, dare I say it, sounds gross now beyond me, but a lot of respect for the English media. But there's a lot of, it's a lot more introverted than other countries. I think it thinks about its own football a lot more than other countries do. Or certainly it thinks less about the kind of universality of European football than a lot of countries' media do, and I think generally the Guardiola and Bayern will, even if they're aware of Guardiola's record against English teams, it won't play a role in how they approach tonight's game. What will play a role is certainly how Man City have improved and how they showed they're up for the Champions League challenge in the first game, and how they beat Man United, although their away form has been poor. They've had a very rainy start to the home campaign in the Premier League, and Bayern will be aware of all that. I think the really interesting thing away from the two clubs and the two teams, if you like, is Pellegrini against Guardiola. I think that's probably the only thing that might kind of play on their minds, because they know each other very well. They've played classics against each other, but generally, as Philip Lund said after the Bayern Schalke game, when someone started mentioning Guardiola, it's all left to Bayern. It's nothing really to do with anything else or Guardiola's history. It's about this team now, and I think that's the mentality they all follow.
City have obviously a very strong midfield. Obviously, Bayern Munich's is just as, and arguably even stronger. Do you see who's likely to change their style of football, do you think, to accommodate the other in this one? Will Bayern kind of flinch first, if you will, being the away side, or will nothing change and it will just see these two sides going at each other?
I think to a certain extent they'll hold true. I think what would be interesting for me is if Yaya Toure particularly has a very, very strong game. That could be interesting in terms of Bayern's defensive midfield, because obviously they've got a lot of injuries. Thiago's not there, Martinez is, I believe, still out. And Schweinsteiger's kind of on the cusp of fitness, and certainly on in terms of being 100% form-wise, he's not quite been there lately. I mean, he's been good, but he's not the player that we've seen him at other times. And Lahm obviously has been playing defensive midfield, and while he's been perfectly good there, he's not a defensive midfielder yet, I think he's perfectly fine for that role, but he's not used to that position. I think a player like Toure can really make an impact. City can be very, very dangerous to the middle. That was how they were playing under Mancini, and I think if they start applying that pressure very early, if they can keep the ball and allow Toure to make his sort of towering runs through the middle, they could put a lot of pressure on Bayern's defensive in the field, and it'd be interesting to see how Guardiola reacts to that. But at the same time, I think Bayern will try and play the normal game. And although they haven't been scoring millions and millions of goals, you have to remember they have been absolutely dominating possession in every single game they've played. So they are taking on to that part of Guardiola's game, partly because it's not a big change to what they're playing under Hankus. And I think they'll go for that again. I think they're capable of doing that, even worse for it.
Just finally, Kit, obviously Bayer Leverkusen taking on Real Sociedad as well tomorrow. Leverkusen suffered that big, heavy defeat there. Will be itching to bounce back against a Sociedad side that played well but couldn't get the job done against Shakhtar Donetsk.
Yeah, I mean, Leverkusen, I think, will know that they have the quality to get through this group. That's what really bugged them off in the United game, I think. That was what the reaction from the camp was, but it wasn't so much a question of not having the quality to beat teams like United, particularly this United side in the current form that they're in. It was more from the mentality, those players turned up to Old Trafford and somehow, whether it was noticeable or not, they did get spooked by the occasion, and they didn't really believe that they could go over 3 points, and that did them in, really. And I think they came away from that game knowing that, and really quite themselves. So yeah, tonight's a big chance to prove that they're up there with the English and Spanish teams, and they can beat them. And they said, yeah, I can't remember who it was who said today, but someone said, we know Sociedad aren't Barcelona, but at the same time they are a Spanish team. They're a big team up there, and they're kind of from one of those big leagues where, because of the team, they didn't want to compete and show on the same level as. So it's a big chance for them to prove that.
Was it inexperience, or was it I guess the occasion, or a bit of the same really that forced Leverkusen's poor showing at Old Trafford?
I think partially it was an experience. I mean, there's a fair few players like Son, for example, who will never have played Champions League football, and a few players who have certainly never really had any serious experience of it. And even I think the more experienced players, you look at players like Rosas and those kind of players, he looks to sort of kind of leave the team in sort of psychological problems like that there. Even those players have never really had any experience of anything but losing to clubs like Manchester United, and so they can't really say, okay, we're going to drive the team forward now. That was always the problem that people said about Bayern before they won the Champions League, that even the kind of really experienced leading players had never won a major trophy, and that caused them problems. And I think at Old Trafford.
Kit, we are going to have to leave it there, my friend. I think we're just losing you on the line as well. So we will let you go and get off to watch a bit of Zenit against Austria Vienna. We appreciate you taking the time, mate, to join us today on World Football Daily. And we look up to catching up with you very soon indeed. Enjoy your time in Germany, man.
Thanks very much.
Kit Holden there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things German football. Slight apologies there for the drop in sound quality slightly there. Big thanks to Kit, though, for giving us a lowdown to three of the four games. Of course, Dortmund taking on Marseille tonight as well. We chat with Ian Holyman a little bit about that one earlier, so we thought we'd get stuck into a bit of City Bayern, and of course, Bayern Sociedad as well. Schalke have got Basel. Schalke so poor in the league at the moment, but looking to be reinvigorated with Kevin Prince-Boateng in their ranks. Big thanks, though, once again to our guests for today for joining us here on World Football Daily. Come on, who's going to give us the lowdown on the rest of everything that's going on in and around the world of football? And there is plenty to talk about. And to be honest, he's going to have to take over from me, because I'm just going to end up going off on a huge, huge rant about how good Romelu Lukaku is, because and he's going to have to slow me down and stop me at some points. It's, of course, the man who holds my hand through World Football Daily as we venture into the dark depths of football every single day. It's Rafa G. Raf, man. I'm just going to start with it. Wasn't he brilliant? I mean, isn't he fantastic? Not only has he got me my fantasy points for this week, and I don't know, like, I crushed it in fantasy thanks to big Romelu Lukaku getting me like 32 points this week and just generally slamming it. I'm in the top four of every single fantasy league that I'm in right now. Okay, top four. I am leading three of them. I'm fourth in one of them, which has like, I think it's got like 68, 69 other players in it, and I'm second in the other one. And I'm leading my two head-to-head leagues. And I'm really getting worried about getting arrogant now, because normally by this point in the season, I've sacked off fantasy football. I'm like, oh, forget it. I'm only thinking mid-table. Right, and I don't want to start thinking, am I thinking championship right now? I mean, am I like an Arsenal fan thinking I've had a great start to the season? Maybe it could continue. I won't be buying Mesut Ozil. He's a little out of my price range. But Romelu Lukaku is the man that everybody should have in at their side. He showed it last night once again against Newcastle. Came out of the blocks flying last night. Newcastle side that started very poorly indeed. I thought their second half performance didn't deserve to take the beating that they took. Did very well to bring it back. A fairish scoreline, although I thought Everton played better than a 3. I thought Everton played better than a 3-2 win. But at the same time, I thought Newcastle deserved to get something a bit more out of the game after that second half performance. It was very peculiar. So I think overall it comes up with that being a fair scoreline. Do you think, Raf, that actually Mourinho's almost thought long-term with Lukaku? Do you think there's been some unselfishness to it in that he knows that Lukaku wouldn't be playing every single game for Chelsea this year if he'd stayed. Whether he should or not is a different question.
Right.
But it's unlikely he would be given the opportunity to, especially with the outside interference you get from the board, etc., stuff like that. Now, Lukaku's known for a long time. He needs to play football continuously, consistently in the Premier League to get better. So do you think, actually, rather than being stupid, foolish, Mourinho, what are you doing letting Lukaku out when he's the guy that you need? Do you think actually he's almost been a little unselfish and he said, go out and continue to get better because we want you to come back when you are, when there is no kind of Fernando Torres rubbish surrounding you. No, oh, Bar, isn't he any good? We don't know because everybody flip-flops about Demba Bar so much. And also, he's brought in Eto'o just for the backup, if you will. Do you think it's actually been an unselfish move that we should maybe actually look at Mourinho and kind of say, you know what, you've made the right choice there? Or is it just, you really messed up. You've let this kid go, and now you might not get him back for 12 months, and you're really going to need him because he is looking tip-top-tastic in the Premier League at the moment. Shame on you, Jose.
Yeah, look, I think that's a very interesting perspective. And the only way that I can see that happening is if Jose really feels like he is comfortable in his position, like he knows he's got time. And that's something that I find really hard to believe. I mean, I'm not saying that Jose doesn't think he has time, but if anyone, I don't care who you are, you could be the Pope, you could be, you know, whoever you think you are, if you walk in to the office as Chelsea manager, you can't expect Roman Abramovich to really respect you, to take your job seriously. You are a stopgap.
I like the idea of the Pope walking into the Chelsea office to take that job, by the way. That is an image I would very much like to see in the Premier League. Pope Francis walking in. Oh, by the way, I am bringing everything I can, my holiness, to the game. And Roman's like, yeah, okay, but give me a Champions League as well, mate.
It's Champions League. You know? You're fired. Yeah, and then he fires, you know, the Pope after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, I find it really hard to believe that even Jose, you know, feels like he can't get, or, you know, planning for the future can only be so far. You definitely have to play for results now. At the Chelsea position, and you know, I think he's got to kind of take that into account. At the same time, Juice, you can argue that he has the players to do that. I mean, Sam Yeto, Demba Ba, Fernando Torres, like these guys should be raking in goals and they should be dominating defenses. So it would be. I mean, it is very interesting. Like, if you look at Lukaku, if he keeps on the pace that he's going, just imagine what could happen next season should he be, you know, really taking on the mantle as Chelsea striker. There's just, like you said, an endless amount of potential with Lukaku. And I'm thoroughly entertained watching this player play.
I'd love to see Pope Francis replace Fernando Torres midway through the game for the Holy Spirit. I'd love to see that. Well, what are you doing? It's the Holy Spirit. Putting him up front. Oh, he can't get anything. Well, he is with everybody, so, you know.
Oh. Call him the false number 9.
I like that. That's good. Let's move away from this, but in case we end up offending anybody, and we do not mean to cause offence at all here on World Football Daily. We're merely mocking football at its worst, as it is at Chelsea. So Lukaku, you think, has been more kind of left alone because Mourinho doesn't have this kind of easiness about his job. You know, going to Chelsea, it's very difficult for any manager. Obviously, you know, you're even successful and the fans hate you in Rafa Benitez's case, or sometimes the fans love you, but you'll still get turfed out, as has been the case with Jose Mourinho. But do you think that Mourinho has a little bit more time because at this moment in time, they're still above Manchester City. They're well above Manchester United, who are, of course, flailing at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. They're 4 points off the top of the Premier League, which is only Arsenal at the moment, who, let's face it, everybody's still talking about Arsenal being a title contender now. 5 games on the trot in the first 6 games of the season. That's fantastic. And Arsenal are playing some great football. But there's still, I think, a lot of expectation that something will happen. I've spoken to a lot of Arsenal fans, and they're convinced that this is great. You know, we are looking like a title-winning side, they're saying. Mm-hmm. But they're also saying, but I'm just, there's always something that crops up. There's always something. And no football season goes 100% smoothly, except when, you know, Manchester United used to win it kind of at record-breaking early pace and Chelsea and whatnot. But at the same time, there is that feeling, that almost pessimism surrounding Arsenal now that something might not happen. And I don't think people truly believe that Tottenham and Liverpool are the title contenders that some people are trying to say they are, just because they're in the top three after six games. And remember, Raf, it's only six games. We've got 32 of these bad boys left before we even start. Before we can pick a winner.
I was going to say it's still a long season. There's still a ton of football to be played.
You know, this is the first time. I think I said it on the show yesterday. You know, this is the first time that they used to kind of. It was about 6 weeks in that they used to actually start printing league tables to show what the table looked like. You know, back in the day before 24 Media News and stuff like that. Now though, obviously we get it. You know, first weekend of the season. Oh, the Baggies are on top of the table. Are they going to win it? No. It's goodness, stop overreacting to everything. But it's still kind of, for me, I still think like 10 games, that's when you start seeing who the real movers and the shakers are and who the kind of false pretenders are, if you will. You know, I don't believe West Ham will be down towards 17th at the end of the season. Obviously, it's been a tough start to the season for them, but I don't think they will be down in 17th. I don't think they have a good enough side to be kind of up in that mid-table. I still think that Hull will be down towards that bottom section of the table and be struggling for relegation despite their 10-point tally after six games at the moment. But it's early doors. We will find out about 10, 12 games who the real pretenders are and who the movers and the shakers will be in the Premier League. So do you think that attitude with Chelsea still above City and whatever actually gives Jose more time to kind of, and less pressure on him at the moment, because nobody's started the season well aside from these three teams that are considered the kind of the pretenders to the crown, if you will, in that top six?
At Chelsea right now, that's
United and City any... stumbling is making it easier for Jose.
Yes, exactly. And that's why maybe like he's not being, or, you know, the media's not been as harsh. It's been easier to kind of, you know, look at the United situation and kind of stare at that crash, because it's a little bit bigger, really, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I guess the media is, you know, the bigger crash gets the more kind of coverage, the more time, you know, the bigger the spectacle, you know, the more people watch. So,
I mean, you think about Newcastle, that's a club really who is... You know, I don't want to say circling the drain or anything like that, but that is a club that really does have problems. You saw it in the defending last night, unable to deal with kind of a long ball through the middle, which Lukaku ended up, you know, getting his goal off. Wonderful play. Yang and Biwa didn't look comfortable last night at all at centre-back position. And really, across the board for the first 45 minutes, Newcastle were at sixes and sevens and didn't know where to look. I think there are problems. Obviously, there was the Joe Kinnear thing, and I think there's repercussions still of that in the back room. The fact they really haven't bought, although they did buy last year, but they bought, and that's a team now that, you know, went through almost a relegation fight. It's not gone into the season with much confidence, I don't think. You know, you can say, yeah, we bought in January rather than buying in the summer, but there's no confidence because that side didn't finish the season well last year for Newcastle. So maybe a fresh purchase would have been able to do that. Remy obviously hasn't quite invigorated the dressing room, although looks quite good, obviously. Has scored a few goals now and has put in some great performances in his first few games for Newcastle. But I still think that is a problem that is just looking a bit miserable on the pitch, looking unhappy and looking disorganised. And you think, you know, Mike Ashley needs to take responsibility for where he's brought in Joe Kinnear, and they need to look kind of around at themselves and say, hey, you know, we're not doing the business at the moment. Raf, we've broken down, and I've talked about Romelu Lukaku, I'm sure, for long enough on this show already. We could make four shows out of the number of times that I've said he's so amazing, he's great. And I'm just saying, I'm very jealous to be a Belgian football fan right now when you've got Christian Benteke, who's hit the ground flying. I know he's injured at the moment, out for 4 to 6 weeks, but hit the ground flying in the Premier League this season, and Lukaku. And like, there's one spot up front for Belgium. It's like, why can't you get these two to play together? Don't forget about three midfielders with one up front. Think about two dominant, powerful strikers up front. Put it in those terms, and suddenly I think Benteke Lukaku is a dream combination that anybody would want. Let's shift gears slightly, Rafa. Let's step away from the Premier League. I want to take things across your side of the pond, if you will. And I want to get into this later on in the week as well. But the announcement today, or very late yesterday, should I say, that David Beckham, DB, the DP from LA, David Beckham is set to return to America as an owner of a new Major League Soccer franchise in, yes, Miami. The place that everybody said, if it's going to be anywhere, it will probably end up being in Miami. The place that is renowned for being so difficult to crack. The Florida market, the Miami market in general. Major League Soccer's been there and failed before. This is a franchise, surely, with a lot of pressure on it. If it gets started, and is Beckham going to be enough to be able to turn the tide in Miami and make soccer a bit of a force down there, Raf? I mean, well, first and foremost, involvement of Beckham in a Major League franchise, good or bad?
Good. Absolutely good. I mean, and especially a market that is going to be a tough market, I think, you know. If he was to go to like a New York or like an LA and, you know, get involved there, it's almost too kind of, you know, predictable and unfair, really, to the other markets in the league. The fact that he's kind of, you know, being tied to this Miami expansion team, basically, is really interesting, you know, like in so many ways, because you got to think, one, that's, I mean, more, you got, there's a ton of, you know, international market there to kind of tap into, but I could almost, you know, predict more of like a Latino market. So I'm surprised they didn't go with like a more South American representative, but that's what they're kind of planning for. And by bringing in, you know, just a global superstar, generally, I know every South American knows who David Beckham is because David Beckham's known globally. So,
well, there are co-investors, of course, expected to include Marcelo Claure, the Bolivian-born billionaire. So there's your little South American link there, Raf, who tried to start a Major League Soccer franchise back in 2009 in Florida and failed, unfortunately. So he's expected to get involved. There's a opinion flying around. Apparently, the Miami Dolphins owner, Steve Ross, will be up to get involved as well. And you think of like the combining those two, like in the same way that New York City FC have kind of combined with the Yankees, if you will, to I think that will do nothing but help in terms of attracting a fan base. You know, they can link the clubs together, if you will. Like, you know, look, it's the Miami, I don't know what they're going to be called, the Miami Floridians again, and they're partnering up with the Miami Dolphins today, and that attracts more attention, kind of thing, as a brand.
What was the old club juice? Was it the Fusion? Miami Fusion.
The Miami Fusion was the one that failed, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that absolutely collapsed. And
could you see that going back to, you know?
I think if they harken
back to the old Fusion days.
I think it's more likely to be called the Miami Beckhams or the, you know, the Miami 23s or something like that. No, I don't see them calling it the Miami Fusion. I think, to be honest, if you're going down to Miami, you want to clear away from a brand name that's failed down there. You know, I don't think you'd want to associate yourself with something that's already failed. I think if you're going down there, if you're starting a new franchise and you're really taking it off with the likes of Beckham and if Marcelo Claure is going to be given that opportunity again, I think you take a completely new, fresh look down to it. You know, you're not trying to make the same mistakes of last time. You're trying to bring something new and exciting to Miami. So you go new and exciting by making it all brand new. Of course, it will be exciting for everybody with David Beckham being down there. It's, to me, of course, it's a positive. You know, do you see it as Beckham giving something back, or do you see it as Beckham expanding his global business?
Yeah, no.
How do you see it?
It's Beckham expanding his global, you know, brand. It's
not like a thank you. Here's like me giving you some.
This is a brand Beckham move, without question, Juice. So. It's just nice that we can kind of, you know, benefit from this as well, because ultimately, you know, Major League Soccer is benefiting hugely from this, expanding the, you know, the league, you know, opening up more markets, bringing more eyes, bringing more bodies to games. Like, that's, I mean, I believe believe that, you know, now is, I mean, the time's perfect to have like a Miami market. I think that Miami can, you know, I could see them jumping more towards you know, soccer, football, than perhaps their actual American football team and their baseball teams. The Heat, you're not going to outdraw the Heat, let's be honest. I mean, yeah. They're the biggest show on the block, and they do kind of.
And you can't those. And you can't have LeBron investing because he's invested in Liverpool, right? So he can't invest in a Major League Soccer franchise with Beckham. That'd be like, you know, Beckham, Mr. Manchester United, with aligning with Liverpool Football Club. No.
Maybe D Wade does that, and then that ignites a split between, you know, the big three at.
Oh, goodness, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Ultimately sending LeBron to Los Angeles come 2014-2015 season.
Where he joins up with Blake Griffin and Chris Paul at the Clippers, and the Clippers...
Oh, no!
Yeah, well, you know what? It's gonna... Sorry, but the Clippers have just made LA their place now. The Lakers. The Lakers are out of town. You can have your celebrities. Give it up, Jack. You done, mate. You done.
We'll have a rough season this year. And then we'll bounce back. And like I said, we'll probably pick up LeBron. LeBron, Kobe. Kobe will make a fantastic, nice run.
And you'll pick up LeBron when he's
eventually in his... take over the mantle of Kobe and carry this team for a few more years to go.
You'll pick up LeBron when he's in Dwight Howard mode. Like, I've done it all. I'm the best. So I'm not going to play anymore. I can't be bothered. You'll pick up LeBron in that mode, man. That's not going to happen. Anyway, yeah. It's going to be New York. New York and LA playing it out for the NBA Finals this year. It's got to be them Knicks, man. It's got to be them Knicks this year.
I think you're dreaming, sir. But back onto soccer,
I can go American football if you want as well. I didn't even tell you that I was down in London.
So what do you think about Fergie kind of having a little, you know, attending the games at the Miami Dolphins Stadium? And why is the Miami Dolphins, aren't they doing pretty well? Did they win last night?
Oh, they got destroyed by New Orleans. What are you on about? They got annihilated yesterday. Yeah, everybody's talking about New Orleans being a candidate now for a Super Bowl and whatever. No one's beating the Denver Broncos, unfortunately. I mean, Peyton Manning's not thrown a pick yet in the first four games of the season. He's thrown four touchdowns in each game. Come on.
Listen, this is good stuff for me to know because I'm trying to, like, you know, really reach out to my other, you know, coworkers at my new job. And you know, obviously they were talking about the Monday Night Football last night. So I was like, what? Monday Night Football? Are you watching the same game? By the way, I almost got in trouble with that game twice.
Because, well, watching, you know,
Yeah.
You gotta be careful, well, you know, man.
The way I have it set up is that I have one screen that absolutely nobody can, like, look at. And so I had this, like, full screen version of it. And, you know, somebody was just walking by my office, but they saw me, like, get really, like, interested at the screen. And they, like, just kind of stopped at my door, and they're like, Raphael? And I said, yes. And they said, is something really exciting? Are you really excited about some numbers on your screen or something? And I said, our lead generation has been really high this week, and I'm just really excited about it.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was just, I played it out perfectly, but it was one of the, like, the accounting girls, and they're just, you know, the accounting girls kind of stiff, you know. They probably thought I was being strange, or maybe they thought I was watching soccer. Who knows?
Gave you a weird look at least, and
right. And they kind of, like, looked away for, you know, every time they were walking by my desk. And I mean, I hope they don't think it was anything really strange. I mean, I'm not that stupid, you know. I watch soccer.
When have you ever been busted watching sport at work? This is what I want to ask people. Let's get a Facebook and Twitter stuff going on with this. When have you been busted watching sport at work? How bad has it got? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 3109098483, and the Facebook page as well. Getting busted watching sport at work. I tell you what, I had the managing director of our company come down once. I was sat at my desk, and I had the football news on my computer screen. I had my mobile phone kind of next to me, and I was tweeting and stuff during the day, and I had my tablet next to my computer screen, which had the basketball on. And he came up to me and said, "Oh, have you seen these papers?" And I said, "Oh, no, I haven't. I've been really busy." And he just looked at me and was like, just shook his head. And was like, "Yeah, okay, I'm busted. I'm really busted. There's no way I'm getting away from that. But do you want to stay and watch the basketball? You know, let's hang out. Let's have some beers or something. Let's have make a day of it." No, that's kind of as close as I've come to being sacked for watching football or anything like that. Have you ever been sacked? That would be great. If somebody, I mean, obviously it's not great, but that would be a story. If somebody has been done for like,
I could share that at the bar. I could share that at parties. Like that's
yeah. I got sacked for watching the Champions League final, man. When they used to play on a Wednesday night, and I was there and I was watching it around about midday, and you know. Yeah, and you got overexcited when, say, United got that second goal against Bayern Munich back in 99 or something like that. That would be a great. If somebody's been sacked watching that, that must be the best and worst moment I think you could possibly have. Raf, it's Champions League night tonight as well. Mm-hmm. We can't shake that. You know, we've been given football every week, every day this week. It's, you know, it's a beautiful time that we live in at the moment. Atletico fresh off their win against Real Madrid. Going in to take on FC Porto, who are, of course, a great established footballing side in the Champions League. How do you see Atletico doing? Will they be able to come off the buzz of beating Madrid? Or will it be kind of like a tired legs? You know, you have that adrenaline rush, you finally come down from it, like the end of the next day and stuff. And suddenly you've got to deal with a Porto side that are going to be very kind of well organized and structured here. Do you see Atletico struggling away at Porto?
You know, I'd like to think that Atletico Madrid kind of keep their wheels going, and you know, it's almost been too short of a memory, you know, the Real Madrid game to kind of to rest on those laurels. I think they're going to kind of still be hungry. You know, Champions League is Champions League. They're going to get up for this. And I think part of that drive is what we were talking about yesterday, is that they don't get the same coverage, they don't get the same representation, I don't think, that Real Madrid or Barca get, you know, going into a Champions League night. I would almost venture to guess that there's more talk about Celtic at Barcelona, or Barcelona at Celtic, just because it's Barcelona. And, you know, I don't know. Obviously, to me, I think the more entertaining game is going to be FC Porto versus Atletico Madrid. And I do think that Atletico Madrid can go there and get some points.
But this is, this is the revenge game as well, though. I mean, there's rightfully so that there is a lot of talk about Celtic against Barca, because this is the game that Barca lost last year. Celtic got that win against Barca. Barca without Lionel Messi as well. I mean, let's not beat around the bush here, Raf. This is going to be pretty tense for Barca tonight. Pressure on Neymar. Can he provide? Can he be that world £50 million superstar? Can he be a replacement for Lionel Messi tonight? I think Celtic are going to be really geared up for this one. You know, they know they can beat Barca on home soil. They know Barca are without the great one.
Here's what's going to happen is that Barcelona know what happened last year. And they were embarrassed by that. And because of that particular reason, they're going to go and want to kind of make a statement out of this game. They go and kind of drop the hammer on Celtic, who, you know, are a little bit overzealous and probably overplay many a situations, and ultimately that leads to their demise in this match. Barcelona kind of walk all over that match. I'm saying it right now.
We have some wonderful games this evening, Raf. What is the give us a breakdown? Give us a breakdown for the pick of your game.
Hold on. You got to let me know how scared you are about Ajax of Amsterdam.
Scared? Why would I be scared? So what? It's been a rough start to the season to Serie A after AC Milan. Don't worry about it, Raf. God, we're gonna choke in Holland against this side that doesn't even have Christian Eriksen anymore. Come on, sure. Raf. Get out of it,
sure.
Mate.
I know that deep down inside you are probably shaking in your boots,
mate. We absolutely annihilated Sampdoria 1-0 on the weekend. So this is gonna be, look. I'm nervous. I am nervous, especially as this is a game that really, if we want to make sure that we're going to be able to match up with Barca. This is a good team that we have to beat to ensure that we can keep the can have second place in this group, because we're going to Milan are going to lose to Barca in those two games, with Messi or not. that's just going to happen the way this side is at the moment. You know what we're like now. We like to give it half a season and then come back. It's not interesting if it's Milan walking it all the way or anything like that. You've got to make it difficult. Keep the fans going. That's how you keep people attracted. That's how you keep the TV money wrapped.
Fair enough. Now, my next question for you then would be, are you watching that or are you watching Arsenal-Napoli?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? That is the pick of the games tonight. And unfortunately, I will be watching the football this evening with friends. More of a social occasion. No, don't worry. No alcoholic beverages or anything like that. It's a work night. I won't be doing that. But I will be watching it with friends. So it is likely that the TV is going to end up being kind of wrestled from my hands, the remote, and it will end up being put onto to Napoli Arsenal. So that, unfortunately, regardless of what I want to watch, is going to be what's on probably the TV screen that I'll be watching Champions League football on tonight, I'm afraid. But that is the pick of the games. Benitez going back to Arsenal.
I think so.
We saw Napoli, of course, kind of underperform in the Emirates Cup. They weren't especially good, but you know what? That is the Emirates Cup. That was the early part of their preseason as well. I don't think Napoli were too fussed here that they're there. What happened? As long as they just got a good bit of a run out. Tonight, it's a completely different ball game. Napoli have started the season extremely well, as have Arsenal. This could be kind of all out football. If Napoli come and really kind of go for a jugular, go to try and get 3 points away from home. And really, in that group, you kind of have to as well. You know, Marseille, you can't predict whether they're going to be a tough side or not to get past. And they made it difficult, that's for sure, the other week. Arsenal, on the other hand, you know, they're going to be gunning. They firmly believe they can get through this group, as do Dortmund. So to Napoli, Dortmund and Arsenal all need to try and bag wins on the road, as well as maintaining their home form this season in the Champions League. So there's going to be no kind of settling for a point or anything like that. I think they're going to be going for this and going hell for leather. I'm really looking forward to this one, man. It has to be a cracker. I'm sure it will be a cracker. Give us a score prediction then, Raf. What do you think for Arsenal-Napoli?
I really couldn't tell you. I'm so intrigued by this match. I cannot wait. I really hope that's as entertaining as I'm building it up to be in my own mind. I'm really hoping that Rafa comes away. Like I said, I've joined his bandwagon. I've jumped on it. I'm fully there, man. I've got my seatbelt buckled and everything. I'm jumping on the Rafa bandwagon with a 2-1 away win.
2-1 away win.
Yeah, I think they stun him. Rafa out mine.
Higuain.
Arsene Wenger.
Higuain carrying an injury this evening, so that won't help Napoli, but I'm sure he will play. What's better then? Let's say it's going to be Ozil, Wilshere, Arteta, Ramsey, Flamini, or Inla, Mertens, Hamsik, Callejon, and Insigne. What's better?
I have to go with Napoli on that.
Really?
The half. Half Real Madrid, half Spain side.
I think it's going to be very tough indeed. I'm hoping it's going to be goals, that's for sure. Your thoughts on the Champions League games, remember, get them into us today at W Football Daily on Twitter. Will be the quickest way to get your thoughts across to us, I'm sure, today, of course. So you can send us an email, show@worldfootballdaily.com. Elsewhere, Dortmund take on Marseille. We were looking at that a little early on with our guest for today. AC Milan, of course, take on Ajax. Thank you very much. Fixtures. Celtic, can they do it again against Barcelona at Celtic Park? Star Bucharest take on Chelsea. Basel take on Schalke. FC Porto take on Atletico Madrid. Zenit St. Petersburg and the early kickoff take on Austria Vienna. And we are going to get off to that early kickoff in just a moment here. A big thank you to our guests for today, taking us through a little bit of the Bundesliga and their thoughts on how the Champions League action is going to fall out tonight. It's going to be special. The trouble is, actually, is that we've got one, you know, so many games tonight that I really want to watch. And then tomorrow night, I think there's two that I'm really itching to see. Like Juventus Galatasaray, especially with Mancini at the helm now at Galatasaray. And Manchester City Bayern Munich are the two that stand out for me tomorrow. Tonight, I mean, I'm going to be making sure I stay up for all the highlights of Porto Atletico, Ajax Milan, Celtic Barca, Dortmund Marseille, and Ajax Napoli. Arsenal Napoli. Those are the games that you really really want to be watching this evening. Whatever game you choose, I'm sure it will be a thriller, and we will talk about them tomorrow on the show. For now, take care. Enjoy the champions. And we will see you at the same time on Wednesday. Have a good one.